Liberals worldwide invoke Scandinavia as a promised land of equality, while most conservatives fear it as a hotbed of liberal threatening socialism. But the left and right can usually agree on one thing, that the Nordic system is impossible to replicate elsewhere. In his new book, Viking Economics, George Lakey dispels that myth. He explores the inner workings of the Nordic economies that boast the world's happiest, most productive workers, and explains how, if we can enact some of the changes the Scandinavians fought for surprisingly recently, we too can embrace equality in our economic policy. George Lakey was the visiting professor at Swarthmore College. His new book is Viking Economics, How the Scandinavians Got It Right and How We Can Too. And it's a great pleasure to welcome George Lakey to the roundtable this morning. George, thank you very much for being with us.
Happy to be with you.
What brought you to this particular topic and looking at some of the barriers that we can overcome to make this possible?
Well, the long story, which I will make short, is that I fell in love with a Norwegian young woman, a student, foreign student studying in this country many, many years ago. I didn't know anything about Norway. I just knew that I liked her. And we actually ended up agreeing to marry, but we needed to do it in Norway for various family reasons. And so there I found myself, stranger in a strange land, learning the language, learning the culture, learning her people, falling in love with her family. And that was long ago, and I just, you know, back and forth from the U.S., kept being impressed by what I saw over there and also getting a chance to work in Sweden and Denmark. But then it wasn't until 2008 and our own financial wobbliness, you remember that kind of crisis time, that I realized that my fellow Americans might really appreciate knowing about a system that is far more stable and more democratic, and not only that, delivers more equality and more individual freedom. So I thought, hey, I think Americans would be interested now because our system doesn't turn out to be as great as we may have hoped it would be.
So what we hear, of course, Denmark, Iceland, Norway, Sweden, there you can go and higher education is free, healthcare free. There is a social safety net. There are high paying jobs and what would seem to be an abundance. Is that as advertised?
Pretty much, yeah. For example, if you work at McDonald's in Copenhagen in Denmark, you're paid $20 an hour. They very much believe in high wages. They don't like poverty, actually. They pretty much got rid of poverty. I'm a skeptical American, you know, so one day I borrowed a bike from a brother-in-law and just traveled all over a small industrial town in Norway, looking for substandard housing. And by the end of the day, I had found a total of one house that looked to me kind of substandard. That was just an industrial town. They really don't like poverty. They want people to live well. And then they figured out, I have a whole chapter in my book on just how they did figure out how to get rid of poverty, because 100 years ago, man, they were in terrible shape. They were really, in fact, they were in such bad shape that tons of Norwegians and Swedes and Danes came to the United States and Canada to get some kind of hope for a decent life.
Talk a little bit, so we will introduce the phrase Viking into this now, and talk a little bit about the Viking culture and how that has worked and has overcome many of the stereotypes when we think of what a Viking culture is.
Right. Well, 1,000 years ago, of course, you wouldn't want Vikings to come visiting you if you were living in England or Scotland or anywhere near the Scandinavian countries. So not because they were particularly bloodthirsty, they were just into vicious combat when it suited their advantage, just as other peoples were in those days 1,000 years ago. So it was. The reason, though, why, and they're very different now, very, very, very highly civilized. So the reason why I wanted to call the book Viking Economics, though, was because what the Vikings did have going for them was a willingness to go boldly where no one had gone before. So they'd get in these small ships, you know, these small sailing vessels of 30 feet, 40 feet, 50 feet at the most long, and go out on the high seas, face storms and terrible weather, and even cross the Atlantic. 1,000 years ago, they crossed the Atlantic because they were expeditioners. They wanted to know what's out there. And I believe that's the spirit that was retained in the culture of the modern folks, because they were willing to invent and able to invent what economists call the Nordic economic model, and it's so successful. And they were willing to invent something new. And I, of course, Americans have done tons of invention, and I just figure we would be interested in inventive people, what they came up with, and how we could adapt what they came up with for our system.
You write about this in the book, it's a fascinating chapter about preventing poverty, and that is the central role of work in an anti-poverty strategy, and basically saying that the unemployment rate, that the government's policy is full employment, and that the unemployment rate is actually a choice made by those who lead their economies.
That's right. That's a fairly new lesson for me. I used to think that the unemployment rate was, or the employment rate, whichever way you look at it, is kind of an act of God or the work of market forces. And it wasn't until I happened to be in New Zealand doing some training work over there, and happened to be there at the same time as the International Monetary Fund consultants were consulting with the New Zealand government about its economy. And the IMF consultant said a mistake that New Zealand was making at that time was to have a full employment economy, and what they needed to do was to induce unemployment, because they said then New Zealand would be more attractive to international investors. And that really alerted me to pay more attention to what does go into unemployment. And I found that it is indeed true that the international, these huge international corporations, really love countries that have unemployment. And the Nordic countries were unwilling to be exploited in that way, you know, by international companies. So they said, no, we're going to have full employment, because that's the way to deal with, that's one of the many things we can do about poverty, is to make sure everybody's got a job and a job at a living wage. And so they do a number of things that I describe in the book that make sure that they have high employment rates. And in fact, Norway has a higher participation in the workforce than the United States does. So they're actually very hardworking people, even though they have a backup of a tremendous lot of security because of their system.
I mentioned this in the introduction, and I do want to talk about it. Is there something in our culture, in our history, that makes it or would make it difficult for us to work with this Nordic model?
Yeah, there is. We do have an ambivalence toward it. On the one hand, I think of Americans as preferring equality to vast, you know, inequality. All the polls say so. And I think of Americans as loving individual freedom, and they do have more of that over there than here. So I think we have some values that are in common with the Nordic model. But on the other hand, we have now lived for a long time with high inequality and with real restraints on our freedom. For example, you can't really go to university. It's very tough to go to university unless you have your parents backing you up with money. And, of course, a lot of people don't. It was easy for me as a young man to go to school and work my way through, but that's just not the case anymore. And so in many ways, they are more free than we are. But I think that a lot of Americans have gotten used to just not, you know, and having a lot of insecurity about health care and having a lot of insecurity about old age. And we've kind of gotten used to it. I think we'll need to get more determined to have the best practices that there are, and then look around the world and see who has the best practices. These days, it turns out to be the Nordic folks. And then just grab those best practices, because we need to feel, again, that we deserve the best. That we don't, that being second rate is not really the American thing. I believe that Americans in our heart of hearts, especially since we live in such a wealthy country, would like to have a different kind of economic design so that we can all participate in that.
I first read the book in September, and to me it seemed like a very interesting blueprint and something to look toward. And I have to say that now it just comes off as a bit of a fairy tale. And I'm curious as to what you make of that and ultimately where your optimism lies about our economic condition.
Well, part of my optimism comes from what they had to go through in order to get their present system. That is, they did have to go through a period when they had only a pretend democracy, and they had a parliament, you know, and they had free elections. But the decisions, all the major decisions were made by their economic elite. So they had a pretend democracy like we do. And they also had tremendous polarization. And in the 20s and the 30s, you could see on the streets of Oslo marching Nazis marching down the street, you know, with swastikas and flags and that kind of thing. And that was in this, you know, and the next street over, you could see communists strutting down the street arguing for you know, total takeover of capitalism and abrogation of freedom and so on. So you have the tremendous range and a lot of conflict going on in Norway and Sweden and Denmark and Iceland at a certain point. And so what impressed me and what I loved writing about was the actual drama of them taking a polarized society. I mean, now we in America have a polarized society. Well, they took very polarized societies, and they used those moments for a breakthrough to be able to push the economic elite aside and say, hey, look, we're going to have a democracy now, and so we're going to then invent an economic system that works for all of us rather than just for some of us.
And Is it too silly to ask about a time frame on that realistic that is in a rather short period of time?
Well, you see, they really did this. I mean, they started out in each country with a tiny movement, you know,
right,
that had a vision, and that's the way life is in all societies that I know. And I'm a sociologist, so I keep track of a lot of societies. But the thing is, these tiny movements, because they had a vision that really made sense to so many people, and because the means they chose for struggle were nonviolent means rather than scaring people away through turning to violence. They were able to grow pretty rapidly through the 20s and the 30s. And the crucial moment in Sweden was 1931. That was when the troops had been called out by the economic elite and were shooting people, killing people in the streets. And so the workers' movement and the farmers, they were in alliance, they called for a general strike throughout Sweden. And a tremendous lot of Swedes responded because they thought, we are sick of this pretend democracy. So they did a general strike, and the government fell. And then they were able to bring in a new government that represented a real democracy. And that was 31. So the Swedes had been building up to that from, I would say, about 1910, 1911, so right in there. And they pulled it off then in 31. Norway was behind them. They really got going strongly in the 20s. But then by 1936, they were able to make their country ungovernable by their economic elite. So the economic elite was forced to step aside. And then Norway developed its own democracy. So we're talking 15, 20 years, something like that, which I know can seem a long time to somebody like me. I'm 79 years old. I would love to see our transition happen in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't guarantee to live that long. But on the other hand, the young people in our country can certainly pull that off with assistance from older folks, because there's plenty of time to do that.
George Lakey was the Eugene Lang Visiting Professor for Issues in Social Change at Swarthmore College. He is the author of the new book, Viking Economics, How the Scandinavians Got It Right and How We Can Too. The book is out and published by Melville House. George Lakey, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for sharing with us.
Thanks for your great questions.
Great pleasure. Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.